You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Now, as I mentioned, that our shapeshifter today is Timothy Oriedo, and Timothy is a big data coach, of course, an entrepreneur and a leader in the tech and data industry. With over 1,200 coaching hours locked, Timothy has left a mark across banking, the telecommunications, retail, government and SMEs as well. Timothy is also an accomplished author, a lecturer, and a consultant trainer. His contribution in academia include lecturing on digital strategy, effective website design strategy, and data analytics for healthcare systems management. Now, his initiatives, such as the Fourth Industrial Revolution Club, guide corporates and individuals through disruptions in the tech space. Now, as the founding chairman, by the way, I'm not done. As the founding chairman of a Data Professional Associations of Kenya, he champions the excellence of data profession, and he's joining us on the line to have this conversation with us. Good evening, Timothy.
Good evening to you. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for asking. And yourself?
Yeah, you can hear me loud and clear.
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Thank you. Yes, I can.
Fantastic. How was your day?
Yeah. The day is good. We are going into a similar winter period like you, but it's a little bit warmer and rainy.
Yeah.
But we're anticipating the cold there.
Fantastic. What's the weather like now? Because I think here in South Africa, it's dropping quite drastically. I think we are in the, you know, single digits. How's that side in Kenya?
Yeah, this side is a little bit cold, not like we experienced the first part of the year.
Yeah.
We're going to be cold in our season.
Yeah.
Yeah, but pretty much a bit of sunshine for about 2-3 hours. In the day, some mist in the morning, and then some bit of rain in the afternoon. Like, pretty much we're experiencing almost four different types of weather in one day. Cold and sun.
that's interesting. It's almost like you guys are in Cape Town, because Cape Town here in South Africa also experiences the same four different types of weather in just a single day. So y'all are like in the same WhatsApp group, Okay. Thank you so much for joining us, Timothy, this evening. Really, really appreciate it. We've got this segment that we call Shapeshifters. And in this segment, we talk to people like yourselves who are, of course, leading in industry, in the different sectors, and people who really, really are doing quite a lot of work in their own industry, shaping and changing things. And we want to give you your flowers while you're still alive, right? We don't want to give you your flowers when you are dead. We want to give you your flowers while you're still alive. And so that's why we have these conversations. But also, I think there perhaps are a lot of young people as well that are looking up to you and looking to the work that you are doing as well, and wondering, how did Timothy get to be where he is today? And that's definitely the part that we really are also interested in. So I want to take you back a little bit, Timothy. Back to your younger days, suppose your toddler days, childhood days, and all that. Where were you born, and what was it like?
Yeah, so I was born the western side of Kenya.
Yeah,
yeah, which is towards the border of Kenya and Uganda.
Yeah,
my parents were government employees,
okay,
working in the farming rural side of Kenya.
Yeah.
So I was born 45 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, born to two parents who are both civil servants.
Yeah.
And farmers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you grew up in a farm, basically.
Yes, I grew up in the farm.
Yeah.
Pretty much in my elementary education.
Yeah.
going to the secondary education, which was boarding.
Yeah.
And then moving to the university, still in the western part of the country.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's characterized my upbringing.
That's interesting. And what's it like being a farm boy? Because I know a lot of people grow up in the cities, you know, with urbanization and globalization, people kind of move into the cities and live in the city. But for a farm boy, what was it like growing up in the farm? So what were some of the things you saw, observed, lessons, looked at, and like, hey, yeah, no, it's interesting being a farm boy.
Yeah. Quite a bit of an interesting mix.
Mm.
We had different experiences, exploring different plants, animals, also seasons.
Yeah,
we'll see how people would toil to prepare their farms, waiting for the rain to come.
Yeah,
and then there'll be the dry, there'll be the area of the season of abundance,
mm-hmm.
that is harvest, special moods everywhere, going into Christmas. You have people buying new clothes to celebrate Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And then that is over, now back to work. So the seasons are like January to December.
Yeah.
A full season.
Yeah.
But that experience was quite critical year on year. Consistency, you can see how those patterns will interplay.
Mm.
We have the seasonal foods as well.
Mm-hmm.
The foods that will come in at the end of the year. In accordance with the weather.
Yeah.
There are also other aspects of socialization.
Mm.
For example, like the children and neighbors that we grew up together, socializing around certain norms, which entail the communal sharing, communal responsibility.
Mm.
Every child belongs to the community.
Mm.
Yeah. So. It was a pretty nostalgic experience narrating because I do remember.
Yeah, that's interesting. So for socials in the farms, like with other kids around, also in their family farmhouse, I mean, really, what are the social things that you guys did?
Yeah. So what I like mostly importantly were the little games. It's for like little boys. It's like lay traps.
Okay.
We'll do like a bird hunting.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll play football that is made from nylon papers packed together and tied using nylon strands. So the football was actually quite phenomenal because you will have sort of competitive big boys.
Yes,
you have very competitive.
That's interesting. It's almost like you guys. You guys were improvising, right? And that's what it sounded like. Because nylon, to make football, you know, that ball that people. That's an interesting thought. And what would you say then? With I suppose that glance back at that, because that seems to be for me a very big part. Because you're learning to improvise, which might be a skill that you might need in life. Because you know, life throws us with so many things, and we need to learn how to improvise and all those sort of stuff, but looking at just that life as a young person back then in the farm, what would you say are some of the lessons that you've learned that maybe somehow you see them through today in your own life at 45?
I think one of the things I've learned is adaptation.
Okay. Hi, Timothy, can you hear me? Timothy? Okay, seems like we've lost Timothy there. I could sense that the network was just not good for that conversation. So let's see if we can get Timothy on a different line there so that we can continue this conversation. But he was talking about one of the things that he's learned was adaptation. Which is an interesting thought, by the way, if you think about how in this world that we are living in today, the ability to adapt and change to how things, kind of happen is very, very important. Otherwise, if you don't do that, yeah, you might find that life, you know, will teach you a thing or two about making sure that you adapt. So that's interesting. And farm life, I wonder if a lot of us who grew up in the cities or are not currently living in the farms would actually survive to live in the farms. Because I know a lot of people are like, yo, farmhouse is just a lot of work. And I just wanted to ask him precisely about the type of work that they did there. But imagine having a football that is made up of nylon. Football that is made up of nylon. Isn't that just on its own quite interesting? Yeah, it is. That's the improvisation and adaptation bit, I suppose. Improvising with what you have and not complaining. Yeah, because sometimes we can complain that we don't have this, we don't have that. That's a lot of complaining there. Hi, Timothy. I'm not sure if you are back online, but you're talking about one of the lessons that you've learned is adaptation.
Yeah. Yeah, so I was talking about how that adaptation was actually a key skill that I picked up from it and became entrenched in my DNA.
Yeah.
Because you'd expect whatever environment you're exposed to.
Yeah.
The necessity of you adapting and molding your expectations around the available resources.
Yeah.
Will be critical to ensure that you fit in.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's one critical thing that we experience.
That's interesting. Now, talking about then, I suppose as a young boy, your outlook on life, right? Because we are told that at least our outlook on life is based on two things, precisely your environment and where you are, and also your own ability to dream, you know, of the kind of future that you would want. What did you see yourself becoming as an adult? What career did you want to explore?
I think to be honest, one of the things and aspirations I had while growing up in elementary school, I was quite intuitive. I had the privilege of having tutors after school who were able to sharpen my skills in the critical subjects, which is English and mathematics.
Yeah.
However, I found myself inclining more towards mathematics. I think that's where my strength was from an early stage.
Yeah.
And that inquisitiveness made me delve deeper into the scientific world.
Yeah.
And so I remember well into my high school.
Yeah.
I had a lot of appreciation for numbers, and I would tend to understand numbers better.
Yeah.
But I struggled a bit in the art subjects.
Okay.
So subjects such as literature, English, history, pretty much. I'll struggle a bit to understand the concepts.
Sure.
And I think it was a natural orientation because later on, when I finished my high school, I was enrolled into campus to go and study home science.
Yeah.
So I think at that point I realized, okay, fine, this is not my calling. So I did manage to change my course at the onset of my admission to university. So I moved down to go to what I really like doing, which was mathematics.
Yeah.
And special education. Special education now is we were being taught skills on how to teach the deaf, the blind, the gifted and talented. So during my break from after high school, I had a chance to volunteer and coach autistic children to participate at the Special Olympics. So it gave me a platform to appreciate life differently. So I figured this would be something that I'd like to carry out more.
Yeah.
So when the opportunity arose at the university, I introduced a new course on that and had some mentorship from my aunt who had experience in teaching the special children. I sort of enrolled for that course. And it opened up a new sphere in my in my horizon. So
yeah.
I started seeing things differently. After putting more hours, because again my curiosity led me to spend more time studying other courses such as psychology, mathematics at a different level, statistics. So I put in more hours than the ordinary undergraduate student.
Mm.
I did programming, also as an additional unit.
Mm.
And this is almost about 26 years ago when I enrolled at the university.
Yeah.
Yeah, and some of the skills that are on paid dividends.
Yeah.
Yeah. They paid dividends almost immediately, because what happened is during my second year at the university, I started participating in a conference, a speaking event. I would apply for abstracts to go and present research papers that I'm research for, not part of my academic studies. Yeah.
Okay.
And I would be able to present. So actually, suffice to say, my first international trip was at the age of 19 years to Durban in South Africa.
Yeah.
19 years while I was still a third year student at the university, won us an award to come and represent the country in an international conference on a topic and research.
Mm.
And that's why I say my journey in the media started, because I got my first interview at SABC Studios in Durban.
Oh, wow.
Just to talk about the experiences. Yeah. So I've been in this game for So and, I think there's always that appreciation I have in terms of sharing knowledge, sharing
insights,
which for me came out like a natural talent and a gift.
Yeah.
I later on learned how to make a living out of it by being a certified coach and a speaker in events, because now I'm able to package myself as a public speaker of events that I speak for purposes of sharing knowledge. But in retrospect, I also get paid to do that.
Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful. So you said you had a very, I suppose, easy, natural apprehension, understanding of numbers and mathematics and all that. Were you considered as the resident geek, the resident clever person at school, both at elementary and high school?
Sorry, come again on that question.
So you said that you had a natural understanding of numbers, if I may put it like that, you know, from when you were growing up. Were you the resident genius, you know, at primary, at elementary school, and at high school as well? Did all the other kids come to you with their maths homework? Did they come to you with their maths homework at elementary and high school?
Yes. So I used to have a tutor who would help to me to understand the concepts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Help to understand concepts that were useful.
Yeah.
In grasping the basics, but then I'll put in more hours. Yeah.
Mm, okay.
I'll put in more hours in terms of building and reading ahead of the teachers.
Yeah.
To see the class lesson. Sure, by the time we're in class,
yeah,
being taught as a group. But you have your own way of understanding.
Yeah. Okay. All right. It's a journey of 26 years, if I've heard you quite correctly, you know, in this big data, you know, space, and understanding that, because I suppose, like I said, with your good understanding of mathematics and all that, and in the 26 years, you've learned now how to package this thing properly as a speaker, as a coach, get the hours going, and put in a lot of work, like more than, I suppose, others are doing. What is the one challenge that you think you've kind of experienced so far in your career that you're like, yeah, this was really a big challenge?
I think one of the highlights of my career, and having worked in the media industry for a couple of years, was being in a constant state of change. So I always found myself I had to adapt to different environments.
Yeah.
Every time you want to settle down on a role, then you are transferred to a different unit.
Mm. Yeah.
You're challenged with a new responsibility.
Yeah.
So I remember, I think, just 2 years after moving into a media role as a account manager in sales department, I was promoted to lead a team that was more experienced and more, they were more older than me. So
yeah,
that was the very first experience I encountered. I figured, am I going to manage this?
Yeah.
So it came in with a lot of challenges. Of course, the people that you want to manage have got their different expectations and perception about your ability to do it.
Yeah.
Of course, them being more experienced. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But nevertheless, I managed to brave on. I went back to school to acquire additional skills on how to manage how to manage myself. Yeah, and also how to manage the expectation of others on me and as a leader.
Yeah.
That's how I ended up enrolling for the master's course in leadership. It was basically to help me understand how to be a better manager. So that was the biggest challenge that I had. Prior to that, because I didn't mention, after my, when I came to South Africa for that, when I was in studying campus, an opportunity to also work in the NGO there. So that meant that some exposure about working. So when I came back to Kenya, I was proceeding to my fourth year of study.
Yeah.
Immediately after my fourth, when I reported, when I came back to Kenya before I started my fourth year,
yeah,
I got the news that both my parents had been retrenched by the government.
Yeah.
So me being the first one of the family, it meant that to now step in and carry the mantle of providing for my younger siblings who are still in school.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
So it made sure that I was working well at the same time. I'm studying. So it's had some price to pay. What happened is I didn't finish my university education on the prescribed time because that makes some sacrifices. I deferred some units, which later on I went to finish, but
sure.
It was a challenging time that I managed to move out of.
Okay, that's interesting. And what would be the one career highlight? So when you think about your career, I mean, it's such an illustrious career, from big data coaching, lecturing as well. You've got, a book out, you're an accomplished author, and you've just been doing quite a lot of work in the big data analytics. And by the way, which is becoming the buzzword in today's world, hey, data is now currency. And people are making money out of that. What would you say is, I suppose, your biggest highlight in terms of the positive so far? I'm sure there's lots of companies that come to you and want your work, and you are making a lot of money. They are not listening right now. Don't worry.
Yeah, so my biggest highlight has been having sort of a focus and early in the game, when something new starts, being focused on it and remaining steadfast to it, even when others are doubting your ability, or they're not understanding what you're trying to achieve, and having that conviction, what we call clairvoyance, is an ability where you can be able to predict that whatever you're doing is going to be of value in the future.
Yeah.
So I've been in this journey for data for the last 8 years, since 2016, and it didn't come just naturally, because what happened is I got retrenched from my job. I was in the media industry as a general manager for leading radio station, but then the unit I was heading was closed for radio, so it meant that all about 80 employees we had to go home, and I used my redundancy check to pay for a course at MIT, which was a significant amount. It was about $16,000 USD.
Sure.
That I can say it was a gamble. So I wasn't sure myself if that would happen. That was the right decision, but I thank God that at least I was able to was able to achieve the much anticipated. Through a lot of effort. So the first year, I went into academia, started sharing skills. The second year, that's 2018. I established my company now. And through it, I've been able to grow organically. Using various tools and various partnerships, having key partners that we're able to deliver. So it's still a learning path, not really where I want to be, but at least we are not where we were. We thank God for that progression.
Indeed, we thank God. Now, as we round up towards the end, let's talk about money then. How would you describe your relationship with money? Is it toxic? Is it good? Is it growing? Are you finding each other? Does money still excite you? Where are you with your relationship with money?
Okay, that's a very interesting question, because I have a certain philosophy about money. For me, I don't keep money. Money has to stay in circulation. So I get very restless when there's money in the account. So I invest in for example, real estate.
Okay.
In my early years.
Okay.
So I started investing in real estate as when I was 27 years. That's about 18 years ago. I've got very investment that I made throughout my career journey. And then also I started living off my check. So what do I mean by that? I didn't depend on my salary. For a significant amount. What I'll do with the salary is put take it to the circle for savings, then take loans with it. But I will create what you call tertiary income. So what I'll do, because of my upbringing in the farm, I understood a lot about farming. So I'll go and lease farms to plant and plow. I also had a cloth line. So I'll travel to Turkey, Dubai, China to buy clothes. And even South Africa has to come to Joburg to be surprised. And you see me buying lots of clothes to come and sell back here. And it was quite profitable and expensive.
Love it.
So I see the Phantom and the Phantom Malls.
Yes.
Yeah, I'll go there, Woodwatch, surprise to select, so then I come and resell.
Oh, look at that. That's entrepreneurial mind there.
So that time I was in employment, but I relied less on salary. So when I transitioned now into self-employment, it was easier because I sort of weaned off from that paycheck. My lifestyle was really revolving around business, and when you get a windfall somewhere, you go and invest in real estate. So I had what you call a passive income that at some point surpassed my monthly salary. So these are from rent collections. And these are the small businesses. So also one of the things I realized about money is investing in yourself. Throughout my career, almost for about 14 years, I was entirely in school. So I'll finish one course and do another, And it used to pay dividends because when I finish a course, I'll take the certificate and take to HR, proof of self-personal development, and my terms will be reviewed based on that. And then also on a personal front, I was able to enhance my skills, gaining new skills, network more. So I'll network with the guys in every class to make business opportunities.
All right. What would you say is what tip on money would you give to listeners right now? You've just outlined just how you are spending your money, you know, kind of putting it here and there. You don't like a bank account that has money. You know, money must go out and work for you. Sounds like there's There's a lot that you're doing around how you're managing your money, and you're having a very good relationship with it. How would you advise people on money?
Yeah, so what I'd like to advise people on money is to be conscientious about, first of all, being ethical about how you're making your money, to avoid these shortcuts, easy come, easy go. Yeah, so people like cutting deals, people like scams. Yeah, yeah. You know, this new age scams where you're able to make quick money, quick kills through these bettings and whatnot. So I think one of the best assets that you can invest in is yourself. Yeah, so find a skill that easily monetizes. Find someone who can mentor you, teach you, pay for you to earn a skill that you can monetize.
Okay.
So let's avoid, so we should avoid that thing, just going into business that way. So business is about buying and selling, but you know, your skill, I always tell people that your skill is a product. Once you invest in yourself, you're able to find a buyer for that skill.
Okay.
So if you're not satisfied with the price, move on to another buyer.
Yes.
We use the same sort of philosophy in my business right now, where we do trainings.
Yeah.
So we tell the students who are joining that whatever you're investing in to pay will multiply, and we show them the places where they're going to get their jobs from.
Yes.
So immediately we get our certificates, and we almost have 100% placement, and we get good testimonials about people who have gone through our programs. And they're able to find jobs, one, because it's a unique skill set and it's still on high demand. And then we are able to pair them with mentors who are able to show them the way. Yeah, so I'm speaking from experience because I've utilized that approach to benefit me.
Yeah.
And I've also packaged it to benefit others.
Yes.
Programs.
I love that. I love the packaging to benefit others as well.
Yeah.
Okay, let's round it up now. Tell me, if you were to go back to your younger self and give yourself advice, what advice would you give to your younger self?
What should I give advice to my younger self? I think what I'll say is that I'll have taught myself to be a bit relaxed, because I used to be very passionate about reading. So
I was
disproportionately so much into books. My social life was a little bit compromised. Affected me in my later years. So sort of, you can say, maybe, I don't know if there's a term like that, like a deep adolescence. So in my early stages of my career, I got a little bit distracted with the fun side of life. I thank God my employer was understanding at that time. It was the things I didn't do in my university, during my high school, that I started doing now after I got employed. That put me on a very dangerous trajectory, but thank God I recovered from that.
In fact, there's a question around that part that came through that I want to ask you now. Someone was asking, apart from studying, ask him, what does he do for fun? So what do you do for fun?
Yeah, so I like spending time with my children. So I've got four children. My first one is 18 years.
Yeah.
And my second one, 13, then 8, and 2 years old. So we like hanging out together. This past week, I've been working and hosting a client's bank from Ethiopia. We are training them on digitization. So we've been hosting our hotel. So I got my kids just there on house of midterm break. So we were just hanging around there. But during my free time, I'm going to chat to them. They're doing the swimming. That's one. Two is I like gymming. And exercising. So whenever it's a part of my culture. To have at least a session, I'm able to take care of my body and my socialization. It's also through networks. That we build with friends, family, across various spheres of influence.
10 years from now, I mean, you've done quite a lot of work, and we really applaud you for that. But you've done quite a lot of work. Where do you see yourself in 10 years from now?
Yeah, so 10 years from now, one thing that I see for myself is a Pan-African leader.
Okay.
Yeah, in the area of a business transformation.
Yeah.
I want to traverse the continent to be able to share experiences, build businesses, help entrepreneurs who are emerging to be able to scale the area of interest. Yeah, so I'm really much focused around that. And let's see how it goes, because I'm building up the steps towards that. So far, we've been able to work in various countries as a company. We have clients in Ghana, in Nigeria, in North Africa, in Morocco, in South Africa, Zambia, Tanzania.
Yeah.
So I think we are ticking that box by having spreading our tentacles across. So I hope one day we'll be able to. Yeah,
that's really interesting. We'll be here, of course, in South Africa to kind of as you build and open up here in South Africa, we should be there to just cover and congratulate you for that one. But my brother, as we end, there are people that look up to you. There are young people that follow your work. As you grow and build this business, kind of getting into a very very interesting space of data, and I think for the next coming 20, 30 years, it will still be a buzzword in the business world. What would be your advice to young people?
Yeah, so what I'll advise young people is to invest their time gaining the right skills.
Mm.
And those right skills don't necessarily mean it's tech. We've got other careers that are really paying and fulfilling, but they've got a scarcity.
Mm.
Yeah, so, for example, the arts, things like music, which can really tap into your talent. Yeah, so we have farming.
Yeah.
So the kind of skills which are really on demand, but have got less supply.
Mm.
Yeah, so I like encourage youth to do that.
Yeah.
And also investment in themselves.
Yes.
Yeah. That's a digital coin that you make.
Yeah.
You can push one for saving. You can push one to invest in yourself.
Yeah.
And then the other side, you can have a little bit of fun.
Definitely. Sure. Thank you so much, my brother Timothy. Really appreciate your time, and we shall definitely continue to just be in the background watching you. And I know this is the first of, this is the second of many conversations that we are certainly going to have. But may God bless you and keep shining.
Yeah. So thank you to Apollo, and I wish you the best as well.
Thank you so much, my brother. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.